Music, where he studied jazz trumpet and music production and engineering. He holds a BS in audio technology from American University and a master's in information and library sciences from the University of Michigan. Before joining the manuscripts department here at University of North Carolina as sound and image librarian, he worked for the National Archives and for CNN. Amy Davis, who I assume the Davis Library we were just told about was not named after, has a master's degree in folklore from UNC and has done folklore field work for North Carolina and Kentucky. Oh, that's nice. Or the Kentucky Arts Council, yes. Okay. Presently, a folklife assistant for the Southern Folklife Collection, and their talk is going to be on Preserving the Sounds of the South, the Artist Moser Collection.
Well, hello again, everybody. We've already introduced ourselves, so I guess we'll just go straight into the presentation. Actually, if we could have the first slide. Okay, just to give you a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today. First of all, who was Artist Moser? We're going to talk a bit about his field recordings, and then we're going to talk about his commercial recordings, and then finally we're going to talk about preserving the collection. So first off, who was Artist Moser? Artist Monroe Moser described himself as a man of many talents and many activities. He was a ballad and folktale collector, a folk ballad singer, folklorist, teacher, historian, actor, and an artist. Perhaps most significantly, Moser was the first ballad and folktale collector of the Appalachians who, unlike collectors Francis James Child and Cecil Sharp, was native to the region and its traditions. Born September 14, 1894 in Hickory, North Carolina, Artist Moser was the eldest child in a family of nine children. His father, David Lafayette Moser, was a descendant of German immigrants who came from Virginia and settled in Catawba County. His mother, Cornelia Elizabeth King, was of Scottish-Irish descent. In 1896, the family moved to Swannanoa Valley, the mountainous region of western North Carolina. They grew corn and potatoes and raised chickens, cows, and pigs. Music was ever present while he was growing up. The singing of ballads and folk songs, as well as old-time religious songs, had long been a family custom. My mother sang to us children from the very beginning, and I learned from the neighbors too. Some of the ballads his mother sang included Cambric Shirt and Barbara Allen. His father occasionally sang and was a great lover of old-time fiddle tunes. Farming also provided numerous social occasions for music and dance. We had a lot of dances and corn huskings, you see. In the old days, the whole community would come together to husk the corn and get it ready. On our farm up on the mountain there, we would have 50 or 75 people come from all over the region around here. After the husking, which would last into the night, we would invite them in. We would have a big feast. We would have a turkey supper or a chicken supper, and then we'd have music afterwards and dancing clear into the night. Way into the night, you see. I never will forget the fine banjo picking that we had. When Artist was 9 years old, the family made a tremendous change, moving from a log cabin in Swannanoa to the Vanderbilt estate. The Vanderbilt estate in Asheville, North Carolina, where his father was employed as a forester. His elementary schooling was fragmented. Because of the distance and isolation on the 125,000-acre Vanderbilt estate, for around 5 years, Artist never went to school. Eventually, he did attend Biltmore High School, graduating in 1917 as president of the class. Upon graduation, he entered the Army and served overseas with the 81st Division in World War I. He returned to the U.S. in 1918 and entered the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He wanted to get a general education because it would provide the flexibility to do whatever he wanted afterwards. Asked by his senior advisor what he was majoring in, he replied, "Everything I can." He studied philosophy, psychology, English and literature, and sociology and history. It was at UNC that he became interested in studying folklore. When he was growing up, folk music was so familiar that he had given it little thought. "I used to hear my mother sing some of the old songs, but they didn't mean anything. I mean, they were not significant as far as I was concerned. But the fact that these professors began to mention this kind of thing interested me a great deal." At UNC, he gained new insight into the meaning of folklore and the need to preserve this important heritage. He graduated with an AB degree in 1923. He then served as principal of Swannanoa High School for 2 years and returned to UNC for an MA degree. After graduation, he began teaching English, first at the University of Tennessee at Knoxville, and then at Lincoln Memorial University in Harrogate, Tennessee. As a young professor at Lincoln Memorial University, he taught folklore to some of his classes using textbooks to illustrate folk ballads. His students, many of which were from rural areas, complained that they knew better versions of the ballads than the ones he was teaching from textbooks. This started artists collecting ballads first from his students and then from their parents and grandparents. After several years of teaching in Tennessee, he returned home to North Carolina and continued his work as professor of psychology and sociology at Asheville Biltmore College, which later became UNC at Asheville. He purchased an inexpensive portable recording machine and began recording local singers and storytellers on lacquer discs. His field recordings were made by placing blank discs on a special turntable where the cutting stylus carved grooves directly into the surface. Now we're going to show you a video clip from a 1985 documentary done by Appleshop called Artist Moser of Buckeye Cove, and this will give you a little video of who Artist was and also the machine. It's a tough act to follow. He made more than 100 field recordings through the late 1930s and early 1940s, including ballads, folk songs, and fiddle tunes. In 1945, Moser gave a well-received lecture at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, using his field recordings as examples. He was encouraged by his colleagues to bring them to the attention of Duncan Emmerich, chief of the Library of Congress folklore section. Moser wrote to Emmerich and sent him a few samples from his collection of lacquer discs. One evening around midnight, a taxi drove up to his house informing him that he had a long distance call from Washington, D.C. At the time, he didn't have a telephone, so the next day he drove to Swannanoa to return the phone call. Duncan Emmerich was calling to request more examples of his collection. Moser sent more of his recordings to be duplicated for the library's Archive of American Folk Song. The library then supplied him with a new recording machine and a stock of blank discs. Moser continued recording ballads, folk songs, and folk tales from friends, family, and neighbors for the library's collection. By the late 1950s, his collection was considered one of the most complete of its kind. He also began performing many of his songs at colleges and folk festivals. And now I'm going to turn it over to Amy, and she's going to tell us a bit about his field recordings.
Do you need this?
Thanks.
Welcome. Okay. After he purchased an instantaneous disc recording machine in Middleborough, Kentucky, artist Moser began to document the traditional music and songs of Western North Carolina. The recordings he made from 1942 up through the early 1950s afford us a unique cultural glimpse of the western region of the state during the mid-20th century. Artist Moser made a striking variety of recordings that reflected his curiosity and appreciation of the world around him. The recordings begin with his family, where he cut discs of humorous family tales and hunting stories from his father and his aunt Aglene, and hymns from his mother. Moser approached the disc recorder like a kid with a new toy, recording family Easter parties, Halloween parties, songs and recitations by his children, his own singing, and programs off the local radio. He then ventured from the home out into the community and recorded school programs, graduations, picnics, and festivals in Asheville, Canton, and Cherokee, North Carolina. Moser also recorded gospel concerts and quartets in Asheville and a historical shape note singing convention in Etowah, North Carolina. Finally, he took the recording device on the road and documented the Redbud Festival in Renfro Valley, Kentucky, which was sponsored by Bascom Lamar Lunsford, and various ballad singers in Tennessee, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and Washington, D.C. Moser's primary concern with recording ballad singers reflected the scholarly interest of the day, which was initially fueled by Englishman Cecil Sharp's visit to the region in 1917 and 18. Sharp's subsequent book, English Folk Songs from the Southern Appalachians, detailed the English roots of many of the ballads sung by residents of the region. Altogether, Moser recorded over 30 ballad singers. One of the most notable singers he recorded was Maud Gentry Long, whose mother, Jane Gentry, was a principal informant of Cecil Sharp's. Maud Long's first letter to Moser begins, "Your letter was handed to me by our postmaster, as I am the only daughter of Jane Gentry living in Hot Springs," which indicates that he knew where to look, but he wasn't exactly sure who he was looking for. After locating Long, Moser recorded 10 discs of her ballad singing and another two of her telling the Jack tale, Jack and the Heifer's Hide. These are possibly the earliest recordings of an Appalachian Jack tale. Moser also recorded the seventh grade class Long taught at Hot Springs High School as they performed several traditional songs. And we're going to play now an example of Maud Long singing the ballad Sweet William, and just hear a segment of it.
Sweet William went to his beloved to give her to understand that he had to go and leave her, go to a distant land. The king doth give, command my love, and I will have to go. If it were to save my own life, I dare not answer no.
Moser also recorded a young Gene Ritchie performing at the Redbud Festival in Renfro Valley, Kentucky in 1946. These are possibly the first known recordings of Ritchie in a public performance, although this particular song that we'll hear, The Two Sisters, was not recorded from a stage performance, probably recorded backstage, or he brought her aside at some point and asked her to sing. So this is Gene Ritchie.
There lived an old lord by the northern sea, bow down. There lived an old lord by the northern sea, bow your bend to me. There lived an old lord by the northern sea, and he had daughters, 1, 2, 3. I'll be true to my love if my love will be true to me. A young man came a-courting there, bow down. A young man came a-courting there, bow your bend to me. A young man came.
Okay. One major musical figure that Moser recorded was the fiddler Marcus Martin. Martin, who lived near the Mosers in Swannanoa, was an old friend of artist's father, David Moser. Marcus Martin was a third-generation fiddler who grew up west of Asheville in Macon County. A powerful and unusual fiddler, Martin's repertoire included an older body of tunes that were no longer common in the region. He routinely used 9 different fiddle tunings for his tunes. Moser recorded over 25 discs of Marcus Martin, both at home and at performances at Asheville's Mountain Dance and Folk Festival. And this picture is from that festival. Marcus Martin is on the left performing with Samantha Bumgardner and Bill McElraith. Artist Moser's daughter Joan used Martin's music prominently in her thesis on traditional fiddle tunes for her master's in music, which she received from UNC Chapel Hill in 1963. And with this next recording, you can hear that the Marcus Martin discs were very popular with the Moser family, so you can really hear the wear on this. And this is one of the better cuts we found. It's called Cousin Sally Brown. There's no doubt that Bascom Lamar Lunsford was involved with Moser's work on many levels, as perhaps the single most influential figure in the revival and development of Western North Carolina mountain music and dance. Lunsford presided over the Mountain Dance and Folk Festival that began in 1928. A close colleague of Moser, Lunsford was another collector of song texts, not of recordings. He was a musician and an important advocate of the traditional music in his region. Artist Moser recorded 23 discs of performances by Lunsford, including an original poem called Who's Who in Wilson Cove that Lunsford wrote for the Moser family while waiting on their porch one day for them to return home. Moser's recording of Lunsford performing Georgia Buck gives a good idea of Lunsford's personality and his masterful banjo playing and singing. So this is Georgia Buck by Lunsford. We'll hear the whole selection.
This song is Georgia Buck. I've known it since I was 10 years old. It's not a variant of the song Lucy Buck, given in some of the books. And the Georgia Buck is dead, and the last word he said, never let a woman have her way. The rabbit in the log, and ain't got no dog, and never do to let it down the log. Shot the preacher's dog, and I never was so sorry in my life. And the rabbit in the level can outrun the devil, and how can I catch it, Lord, Lord? Georgie Buck is dead, and the last word he said was, never let a woman have her way. Let a woman have her way, she'll lead a man astray, so never let a woman have her way.
Bascom Lamar Lunsford singing at the home of artist Moser in Wilson's Cove, September 20th, 1947.
Okay, thank you, Bascom. the Mountain Dance and Folk Festival, that's the flyer that we have from it in his collection, grew out of Bascom Lamar Lunsford's involvement with the Asheville Rhododendron Festival in 1928. The festival is still held today, over 70 years from its inception. Moser's recording of the festival are possibly the oldest made. He first recorded the festival in 1942 and then again from 1946 to 1949. The recordings feature a host of local talent chosen by Lunsford. Besides the traditional opening band of Marcus Martin, Samantha Bumgarner, and Bill McElreath, these discs document popular veteran performers such as George Pegram, Please Mobley, no, not yet, and Smilin' Red Reaper, and singers Virgil Sturgill, Laura Bradshaw, and Peggy Baker. Historically, this festival has best been known for its square dancing, where regional square dance teams performed in highly competitive dance contests. When writer Loyal Jones was researching his biography of Bascom Lamar Lunsford, artist Mabel Moser reported that artist was actually threatened by a losing dance leader when they served as judges for the dance contest. artist Moser's recordings provide a unique audio portrait of this festival, which was not recorded continuously until a much later time. In 1949, Moser recorded 15 discs of the festival, and these recordings include some wonderful performances. We'll next hear banjo player and singer George Pegram, a very popular performer from the Piedmont who Lunsford originally hired when he organized festivals in Raleigh and Chapel Hill in the mid-1940s. Pegram was so popular in Asheville that the audience often requested him with chants of, "We want George." Loyal Jones described Pegram as somewhat heady over this popularity, and he might just come forward without Lunsford's nod. Pegram's version of "I Am a Pilgrim" illustrates his powerful performance style, and the opening statements we'll hear by Lunsford also are a perfect example of Lunsford's method of coaching various types of material out of performers. And just as an aside, there was a recording made of George Pegram, and it was the very first LP released by Rounder Records. So this is George, a little bit of George Pegram.
We're glad to announce that he's back here this year. We got one side of this player last year, and I want to give you the other side. Born and reared up near Pilot Mountain in Surrey County. Plays the traditional mountain music in his own way. George, I want you to sing and play that song that you sang for me that day I called at your house. That's Sunday afternoon. You want to sing it? It's a spiritual. I like to hear him play it, and he can really pick the old five-string banjo and get just as much out of it as any person I ever saw. All right.
I am a pilgrim, just a stranger, just having to lose a man. I got a home, Lord, in yonder city gloom. The Lord is not beneath my hand.
Moser's 1949 recordings of the Mountain Dance and Folk Festival also document some surprising new ground. Several discs feature performances by a unique ethnic and religious group named Valdensians, who beginning in 1893 settled what is now the town of Valdez in Burke County. Valdensians originally hailed from valleys of the Cotian Alps of northwest Italy and spoke a French-based language with Italian influences. Members of a marginalized pre-Reformation heretical sect, the Valdensians claim to be the oldest evangelical group in the world. In the 12th century, their leader, Peter Valdo, convinced them that everyone should be able to hear the Bible in their native tongue instead of Latin. Although Valdensians had struggled through centuries of persecution, it was economics in the 19th century that eventually forced them from their tiny hillside farms in the Alps that could no longer support them. The inclusion of this community in the Mountain Dance and Folk Festival reflects a slowly expanding definition of folk song and dance amongst Lunsford and other festival planners of the time. And here's an example of the Valdensians singing a song called the Cuckoo. They're singing in Italian instead of their usual French dialect. Aside from the area folk festivals, artist Moser showed interest in local sacred music performance as well. He recorded several gatherings that featured white gospel quartet singing, but most notably he made 18 discs of the Etowah Christian Harmony shape note singing, which has been held twice a year in Henderson County for over 100 years. Since Moser used the Library of Congress 12-inch discs for these recordings, which were the recordings were mostly made in 1946, he could accommodate the many versed, slow-paced songs on each side without interruption. And this is a photo of his hymnal. Christian Harmony shape note singing, found regionally throughout Western North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama, uses a 7-shape notation as opposed to the 4 shapes found in the more widespread Sacred Harp hymnal. Artist Moser was an avid shape note song leader, and this is a photo of his hymnal, as I've already told you. As you can see from the inside cover, it was well used, with many of his favorite hymn numbers listed prominently. Moser's recordings of the Etowah Sing point out some intriguing differences with today's style of singing. For one thing, the singers on these recordings ran through very few of the songs first on the fossilized syllables. This may have been at Moser's request to save time on his disc, but it may also have been the preference of the song leader, as a few of the recordings were led with the syllables first. There is also an organ playing in the background of these recordings, and today's sings are strictly a cappella, with great emphasis on the leader pitching the song correctly to the singers. Here's a recording of the Etowah Choir, as Moser called it, singing Sweet Rivers.
Sweet Rivers, choir at Etowah, NC, led by J.W. Hiff of Asheville, NC. Go ahead.
Sweet rivers of bringing me love, lies just before my eyes. And I shall fit in another world, I hear the rivers cry.
Intriguing of the recordings artist Moser made was of the Cherokee singer Will West Long and dance performances at the Cherokee Fall Festival. Moser had always been interested in Cherokee culture, and the recordings he made in the mid-1940s did not have the tourist veneer that the town of Cherokee was beginning to project at that time. Will West Long was an authority on Cherokee lore, who carefully documented his culture through recording songs, dances, medical formulas, and even personal chronicles and notebooks written in Cherokee. For many years, Long collaborated with anthropologist Frank G. Speck, who recorded Long and several men from the Big Cove region on a disc recorder built by his son in the mid-1930s. Will West Long was also recorded on wax cylinders by German ethnologist Franz Obrecht in 1927 for the Library of Congress. Long died in 1947, but not before artist Moser recorded 2 discs of his singing and 4 discs of various Cherokee dances demonstrated at the annual Cherokee Fall Festival. Today, Will West Long's nephew, Walker Calhoun, who learned most of Long's song repertoire by age 9, has carried on the singing and dance traditions in Big Cove. Walker Calhoun received the National Heritage Fellowship Award in 1992 for his efforts in keeping Cherokee song and dance traditions and the legacy of Will West Long alive. And here is Will West Long singing the Eagle Dance.
And sing the Eagle Dance.
The Eagle Dance. Well, we'd like to hear that.
Hande Huna, 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 Hande Huna. Hey ya, Hande, hey ya, Hande.
Okay, I'm going to turn it back over to Steve, who's going to talk about artist Moser's commercial recordings and preservation.
A number of the recordings artists made for the Archive of American Folk Song at the Library of Congress were released on the seminal album series Anglo-American Songs and Ballads. Artists also made commercial recordings in the 1950s and 1970s of his own performances. In 1955, he released North Carolina Ballads on Folkways Records, which featured him singing and playing dulcimer. He also appeared on Riverside Records LP Southern Mountain Folk Songs and Ballads, released in 1956. In the 1970s, artists released 2 more commercial recordings, North Carolina Ballads and Folk Songs on Rich Artone in 1973, and North Carolina Mountain Traditional Folk Songs and Ballads on Folkways Records in 1974. They all sound very similar. Moser's philosophy towards performing traditional music was to retain the tunes and spirit of the songs by keeping to the versions he remembered or found. He wrote, "I do not think we should change them except unconsciously." Okay, now to talk a bit about the preservation. Prior to the advent of magnetic tape, lacquer discs were the primary carrier used for creating instantaneous recordings. Typically, discs were made from an aluminum base covered with a coating of nitrocellulose or cellulose acetate lacquer plasticized with castor oil. Glass was also used as a base during World War II, and cardboard bases were used as an option for inexpensive home recording. These discs were commonly used by field workers in folklore during the 1940s and 50s. Because of their inherent nature, lacquer discs are a very unstable medium for sound recordings. When the discs lose their plasticizer, the lacquer coating shrinks or hardens. This causes the coating to crack, and in advanced cases, it flakes or peels off. The base can also be damaged. Exposure to water will damage cardboard bases. Glass bases can break, and aluminum bases can be dented or bent. Lacquer discs must be transferred to a stable medium if their content is to be preserved. Artist Moser's original field recordings were donated to the Southern Folklife Collection by his daughters Joan and Irene Moser in July of 1995. They consisted of 127 cardboard and aluminum-based discs. Some of these discs were in very good condition, showing little signs of deterioration. Casey, and local sound engineer Jeff Brown. The discs were cleaned using Kodak lens cleaner. Kodak lens cleaner was chosen because it had been used by the National Archives for 20 years and had been used by Georgia State University on a recent transfer project. Lens cleaner was rubbed into the grooves of each disc to remove the plasticizer residue. The discs were then rinsed under tap water to remove the lens cleaner, then patted dry with cotton diapers. Each disc was further rinsed with distilled water on a Keith Monk's record cleaning machine. Many of the discs had to be treated with lens cleaner multiple times to remove all the residue from the grooves. Cardboard-based discs were wiped rather than cleaned, and the discs exhibiting signs of delamination were either not cleaned at all or were spot cleaned in the areas not delaminating. The vast majority of the discs cleaned up rather nicely and presented no problems when transferred. Transfers were made in the manuscripts department's John Rivers Preservation Studio, which is upstairs, and hopefully you'll get a chance to take a tour later on in the week. To do the transfers, we used a Technics SP-10 MK3 turntable with a Stanton 500 cartridge and a variety of different size stylus. The preservation masters were made onto 3M996 open reel tape running at 15 IPS on an Atari MX5050 recorder. Reference copies were made onto high bias audio cassettes at the same time as the preservation master. Test tones and a slate were added to the beginning of each preservation master, and the process was carefully documented in a Microsoft Access database. Just quickly to conclude, Artis Moser was a highly creative, energetic, and talented individual whose contributions to Western North Carolina's traditional music have not yet been given prominent recognition. As a resident of the region, Moser played an important role in directing many music collectors and scholars from outside the region to local area musicians. Moser himself left very little in terms of published material to mark his place among music scholars of the time. But his recordings and unpublished writings document an important era in the cultural history of the region. Folklorists, historians, collectors, and musicians alike can gain insight into the abundantly rich music of the time through the preservation of these important recordings. Thank you very much. We'll take any questions if anybody has any questions.
Yeah. When you say a slate, was that it? You mean a verbal description of the piece, or?
What the slate would include is which disc that we were transferring. Each disc was given its own specific number. What side of the disc? The preservation master number as well. I'm trying to think. Is there anything else that goes on the slate? Oh, okay. I think that's it. I think that's it for the slate. Anybody else? Okay. I guess that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve and Amy.